All right, this is getting annoying. Let's go to Facebook somewhere here. Well, you know, we could talk about STEM in scouting. A little bit.
Okay.
Or alternatively, I had one that was like knife safety. That was a thing that came up recently that I saw.
Okay.
How to earn a merit badge. Well, welcome back to another episode of Scouting Stuff You Should Know. This is episode 8, unless I've already lost count, but that's all right.
In which case, it might be episode 9. Who knows?
Who knows? Well, the website knows, and yes. So anyways, a professionally done, completely not off-the-cuff scouting podcast. Tonight, what are we talking about tonight? Well, actually, I have to disappoint again. We were going to talk about the Pinewood Derby, but through a confluence of events, namely Valentine's Day, it was inadvisable to take some time with Brian when I wanted to take some time with Brian to get him on the show to talk about Pinewood Derby, because there were other things afoot. And so we will have to shelf that for another week, and that's unfortunate, and I apologize again, but we will be doing a comparison and contrast at some point, Pinewood Derby versus Beaver Buggy Cub Car Scout Truck.
Yes. There's a lot of things to talk about, you know, specs and all that good stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, it's nice that this is Pinewood Derby season, because if you follow, like, the Scout stuff on Twitter, whether it's, like, the BSA account or Scout Link or, like, just all of those scouting-focused Twitter accounts, there's been some really great Pinewood Derby car pictures.
Oh, yeah.
I saw R2-D2 the other day. It's just some really nice, like, sleekly, immaculately well-done cars. Advice on how to get, like, you know, that nice sheen finish on your Pinewood Derby car.
Because all scouts are doing their own work, right?
Yes, totally.
Nobody is helping them.
Although, actually, one of the arguments at Scouting Magazine, one of the blog posts at Scouting Magazine, did concern, you know, how it's actually really important to foster parental involvement in Pinewood Derby. And, you know, like, it isn't something that we should demonize or trivialize. But,
well,
I mean,
I think a parent should be involved when their kid fires up a bandsaw.
Yeah,
or some sort
router
of power
or,
dual.
Yeah, so anything. Yeah,
I'm just saying. But that's just me.
It's a thing. Yeah. And actually, you know, too. I mean, you got to admit that, you know, the night that you're doing the Beaver Buggy races or the Cub Car races, and probably the Scout Truck races too. I haven't seen for myself, but you got to admit that, you know, on those nights, that's usually when the percentage of dads showing up and sticking around for the meeting, like, just spikes.
Yes.
Just, like, spikes right off the, yeah. It's
yeah, testosterone-fueled event.
Yeah. But you know what? I mean, that's nice, too, right? Like, it is good to see that involvement, so.
Yes. Agreed. But, unfortunately, that's not the topic we're talking about this evening.
Yes, for any more minutes than we already have. No, wanted to talk about, and this is something that we can try and keep on the briefer side, because I mean a lot of it should be fairly straightforward, but with, I mean, I know our scout group right now is prepping a contingent to go to Canadian Jamboree. There's a big World Jamboree, I believe, also next year.
Maybe for those that don't know, I'm assuming everybody knows what a jamboree is, but there might be the odd listener.
You're listening to a scouting podcast, so I guess I am kind of making the assumption that you know what a jamboree is.
There is some assumptions going on, but remember, it makes a...
But anyways, so, I mean, the whole concept of a jamboree is basically, it's a... I guess one way you could put it would be, you know, like it's a scout camp writ large, except it's so much more than that. Like, whether it's at the provincial or state level, whether it's at the national level, I mean, if it's at the international level, of course, obviously, it's a chance for, you know, scouts, members of scouting, because, I mean, some jamborees I know have been open to cub participation, obviously the venturer level, you know, the 13, 17-year-olds are encouraged to join in. And then, of course, adult participants, too, can go as, usually as offers of service, but there's still a lot for them to take in. But it's really a chance for scouts, members of scouting from all over the world to come together in one place for, in some cases, a couple of weeks. And, I mean, definitely, you know, engage in activities that challenge their knowledge as members of the scouting movement, but then also, you know, allow them to share different experiences of scouting from around the world. It's, I mean, I know the last time I was at World Jamboree in 2007, and, you know, I was working with, rovers from, Switzerland. Mm-hmm. I was working with a bunch of members of scouting who were monks. And that was actually the charism of their monastic order was scouting. And then I was also working with nuns who, likewise, that was the charism of their sisterly order was scouting. So, you know, like, just really a chance to see, like, wow, like, there's a lot of different ways that people do this scouting thing. And it's really, really awesome.
As part of that international event, though, and with the exchanging of ideas and whatnot, there comes a a unique opportunity that you can see what others have as far as their scouting apparel go, what their badges look like, what their crests look like, emblems, all of that good stuff.
Scarves, yeah.
Yep, neckers, woggles, all of that good stuff. And regardless of the level, there is that opportunity to exchange badges or trade them. And it is very much a culture in those jamboree settings. They devote areas of the site to badge trading or exchanges. You can also see it in the general populace of the event as well. But there are dedicated areas, and people will set up their campfire blankets with all the crests that they ever have, if they ever have, or and they'll sit there and barter their wares, if you will.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's a very neat experience, right? Because, of course, badges, the badges for each level of scouting, and not just each level of scouting, but, you know, from all these different places around the world. I mean, even comparing, you know, Scouts Canada versus Boy Scouts of America, there's going to be a pretty significant difference in the subjects of some of the badges, and even in places where, you know, the subjects of the badges overlap, the badge artwork, if you will be different. Of course, each group has, you know, hopefully got their own unique crests. I mean, obviously there is a certain cost associated with adopting and creating a crest, so it may not be true that every group has one, but for those groups that do, I mean, there's a unique thing. There's all sorts of, you know, other badges that, you know, aren't necessarily badges that go on a uniform, but that can still be earned. And yeah, it's really, and of course, again, like, the shirts, you know, uniform shirts are often different. Some people actually bring extra uniform shirts to trade those. I mean, again, there's a bit of a cost associated with that, and that kind of gets to this whole economy and culture that has sprung up around it. But it's a thing that happens too. Scarves, neckers, that's another big point of trading. I mean,
you have your contingent scarf. So in the jamboree setting, you're part of a larger contingent. If we're talking about an international jamboree, you have a uniquely a unique necker to your country.
Yes.
Us being from Canada, we had a rednecker when we went to the International Jamboree in England in 2007. And but they also have a Jamboree necker that everyone wore on the one...
The special occasion days, like the opening and closing. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was... there are those neckers, but of course, everybody's getting one. If you have a contingent necker...
Those are often sought after.
Yes. And in the Canadian contingent that we were in, they made sure that when you ordered a necker, you weren't just ordering one.
Yeah, you got like five or something.
Yeah. And then we, as a group that traveled together, there was about seven of us, we actually went and special ordered some neckers specifically for us. And they were a sought after item, along with our Red Rover berets that we had.
Right. And I guess it's worth noting too here that at the time when Colin and myself were both in Rovers, we had this, there was no official uniform hat for Rover Scouts in Scouts Canada at the time, and there still isn't.
The policy is no headgear for Rovers.
Right. Mm-hmm. But we had adapted a headgear tradition actually from the
dating
certainly the Rover crew that had kind of preceded us, members of who had kind of been foundational in sort of the creation of our Rover crew. But we adapted their tradition of wearing, they're actually Basque berets,
right?
And just like bright red, like really, really profound. Like if you've seen like an Etch-a-Sketch, that red. And we had like these badges that we would then put on the front. They were affixed with Velcro, as I recall.
We stitched them on.
Some were Velcro, some were sewn. That's right. Yeah, it depended on the era.
Yeah.
So we had like a Rover Scout badge that would go on the front of the beret. And yeah, they weren't official uniform by policy, but they were particularly distinctive because, I mean, there were only a handful of Rovers present in a sea of thousands of adult volunteers who had these things. And so they were a hot ticket trade item for sure.
People were offering all sorts of things for the chance to get a beret from a Canadian. And it wasn't all Canadians either, because Scouts Canada had the tradition of no headgear. It was unique to just a couple of Rover crews that were in Alberta that had decided to adapt that policy.
Yeah.
And it was fun because we could see each other, you know, in a sea of people. There'd be thousands of people, and you could just scan the heads of everyone and go, oh,
red hat right there. We need to be over there.
That's where I'm headed. So. Yeah.
But if we'd have known they'd have been such a hot ticket item, we could have gone to supply sergeant.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, people were offering us their contingent jackets.
That's right, because some of them did have jackets.
Uniforms, like full uniforms. There was a backpack that got offered, like, and not just a slouch backpack either. It was a pretty high end, high quality
mm-hmm.
backpack, as I recall.
And, yeah.
So I mean, you have those rare items that people want, and really, it turns into being how much they value having your item.
Yep.
And they will ramp. They potentially could ramp up the trade.
Yeah, because I mean, it's very much, you know, it's a barter thing, right? And in a lot of ways, I mean, the value of these things is subjective. And I'll give you an example. Like one of my more treasured scouting possessions is actually the Swiss contingent necker. I traded a girl named Annalore for, I gave her my Canadian necker. She gave me the Swiss contingent necker. And I still pop it out at Beaver meetings sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we're doing like a segment on or a session on geography, I'll usually show up to the meeting wearing the Swiss contingent necker.
Nice.
Because, you know, it kind of forces the segue, but it works, right? Because you're like, why are you wearing a different necker? And I'm just like, well, it's actually from a girl, a rover from Switzerland. Where is Switzerland? And we go from there. But, you know, like I treasure it. Like it's a really, I value that a lot. Like, that's a really, I think of all the things I came home from WJ 2007 with, that's probably the thing I treasure the most. And so, I mean, there's a, I can't use it for anything in Canada, except again for, like, you know, a beaver meeting demonstrating something, yeah, right? But, you know, still, like, subjectively, I assign a high level of value to it because there's a lot of positive memories associated with that Necker and with the person that I got it from. So, yeah, I mean, something like, you know, these rare Rover Scout berets, even though they're not necessarily, you know, Scouts Canada policy approved, and actually I don't think our Rover crew uses them anymore.
No, I think they've phased them out. I
think that's gone the way, but still, I mean, you know, people attach a high subjective value to those, and so, yeah, they're willing to make a quite significant trade to obtain one. Mm-hmm. Which is, now, to be fair, I guess it's worth, you know, cautioning that, well, as a result of this, I mean, you can see where this process can become, exploitative or, yeah, just... abusive. You know, I mean, certainly when you're making a trade, it really is important that it be something that both parties are very satisfied with, right? I mean, obviously, you each come to the trade placing a certain value on the things that are the subject of the trade, but mm-hmm. it's really not a good trade if one person walks away feeling like they're not entirely sure they got the best, you know, deal out of it. I mean, ideally, when you're making a trade, it really should be something that, you know, you're both very, very happy with.
I would caution, or I would suggest, as kind of a rule of thumb, at least from my perspective, I always tried to trade like for like. So if I was trading a badge, a group badge, I would trade it for a group badge. I wouldn't trade it for some off-the-cuff other crest. I would trade it for a very similar, like a group crest.
Yeah, I mean, with, and I mean, I guess you could expand it a little bit, right? Because, you know, like, I mean, we're fortunate because we do have a group crest.
Right.
You know, it's our old 59th Edmonton group crest. Hasn't really changed. I think I actually still have the PSD file somewhere around here. Yeah. But
we also have the area.
Yeah, we also have the area and the council crests, right? Yeah. So, and I mean, this is part of Scouts Canada's organization, right? So I'm part of, you know, this scout group, which is within this area, which is governed by this council. And I have badges representing each of those levels. And I would think that in a situation where, you know, like, say I didn't have a group crest, right?
Right.
I mean, it might also be a fair trade for me to, say, trade a council badge for a group crest.
Right.
Because, you know, when you're dealing with, like, you know, especially when you're dealing with someone who comes from a scouting movement that doesn't use that same area, section, organization scheme, mm-hmm. You know, then really they're all kind of subjectively equal.
Yep. But, and where I was headed with that as well is, like, a Necker would go well with a Necker.
Right.
You know, a uniform, if you felt compelled to
yeah, if you really want to swap shirts,
hey,
you know, by all means do.
That's not for me to say. Mm-hmm. I never did it, but I know I knew a couple of people that did that across a couple of jamborees.
If you're planning on trading shirts, wear an undershirt. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, whatever, it's your call.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, I mean, although that raises an interesting question too, because I mean, like, you know, I not that it's a big deal for, you know, us at the Rover level or now at the leader level.
Yeah.
I mean, we have the badges we have, and that's mostly, again, just identifying group and council and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Or but, stuff we've collected in our scouting mm-hmm. careers.
Right. But that's, but, you know, I would wonder about, you know, like, what if a scout, because the scouts now wear all their badges on their uniform, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would wonder, like, you know, would a scout But would a scout ever actually make the step of trading, you know, his main uniform shirt, the one with all of his merit badges? Or is that where the argument for bringing extra shirts comes in, right?
They may or may not grasp the concept of being able to do that, right? Because they don't know that they can go to the scout shop and get another shirt.
Yeah.
Or they're not... Here's the other argument. Is there maybe their financial situation isn't such that they would be able to go and just
grab two or three shirts to give away. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that has to be taken into consideration when educating youth on whether or not it's prudent to trade a uniform.
Right. Because... But I guess the point there to make, too, is that, you know, for scouters, this is actually something really good to discuss with the contingent or, well, I guess the group of kids that you are, you know, if you have a jamboree group, or you know what, well, no, let's just stick at the jamboree level for now. We'll bring it down in a minute. You know, if you do have a group, especially that's going to a jamboree, this is definitely something, this is a discussion to have. If you haven't already been, would definitely encourage having this discussion with your youth and just, you know, letting them know that this aspect of scouting culture exists and that, you know, these are the that, you know, you can literally trade the shirt off your back if you so desire. I mean, we kind of knew that there was going to be a lot of trading going on, but at the same time we kind of went in cold, right? You know, like, we knew the neckers were probably going to be popular. We got extra neckers.
And we had some special crests
yep,
that were our crests as well. So we got some extra of those. And there were a couple of shirts and a couple of jackets and a couple of things that we got.
Yep. But, I mean, it would have probably been... I mean, I think, you know, a more clear explanation of, you know, like, hey, I mean, if you can, go and grab an extra shirt or two because those are good trade items too.
Yeah.
If you can afford it, right? I mean, obviously... You know, you have to play at the level that your finances allow for. So,
we also did some unique things where we approached our local government offices, for both the city, the province, and the federal level, and we got, you know, pins and other things that were unique to the city, province, and country to take with us. So we had a bag of pins that we could dole out as we were meeting people. And I think we also got a Canadian flag to run around with as well. So that was...
Yeah, we had a couple of three flags. And actually, I had one of the pre-1967 flags too.
Yeah.
So still have that somewhere around here as well. But it's worth noting too, though, actually... I'm glad you mentioned the pins, because that was something that was boiling in the back of my mind, too. It is actually really cool to, you know, if you can do that, I mean, yeah, by all means, like, hit up a constituency office, you know, the mayor's office, state or provincial offices, because they will usually like to... you know, to furnish you with stuff to say, yeah, hey, I mean, yeah, here, sure.
Foster goodwill.
Go and spread Edmonton around, please. Yeah. Let the world know.
Tell them how good we are.
But the pins in particular, they were a nice item to give away, but they were not a particularly hot trade item because it really seems to be a particularly North American fascination. Outside of North America, the pins really didn't travel as a trade item. So, I mean, but, you know, it was still nice to be able to have something just like, well, you know, like, here, no, just seriously take this. I don't want anything in return for it. This is just, this is where I'm from.
Yeah.
You know,
like a little bit of a conversation and a thank you for chatting and, you know, getting to know somebody.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that, you know, this is not something that only happens at the jamboree level. I mean, any scout camp you go to is an opportunity to... And you know what? It can actually even be true if you're just camping with, you know, within your group. I mean, in-group badge trading maybe isn't as common or as frequent, but it can still happen. But, you know, if you're at just area scout camps where you have scouts from a few different groups coming in, that too is really an opportunity to, again, trade and exchange badges, neckers, because, you know, I mean, those differences still exist, and there's, you know, a lot of, there's still a lot of opportunity to, you know, yeah, have these liaisons and, you know, each leave with a bit of a souvenir from the other.
And if the finances warrant it for a group, I mean, you can furnish your youth with a couple of extra group crests and a couple of extra neckers and that kind of thing. I know it's not, you know, always common, but, you know, you go to an area camp or something, it's nice to have something to gift or trade with another group that you might be paired with or share in the same experience at this area camp with. Now, we've been talking mostly on a leader level about this.
Right.
There are some, you know, there are some unwritten rules. I'd like to, at least in my mind's eye, there are some unwritten rules about badge trading and trading in general. One of which is like the like for like, but, you know, that's just a personal observation. But I never trade a badge with a youth.
Yes.
For me, that is a big red flag, a big no. Mostly because it can go south. Mm-hmm. You can look like the bad guy very easily.
Yeah. So really the rule, to take your original like for like, the second rule could be phrased perhaps as age for age.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it. That'd
you know, be... I mean, we, you know, if, you know, you have a first year scout and a third year scout trading, that's okay. But yeah, as a leader, or, I mean, if you're an adult offer of service, a rover scout or similar, that's not to say you can't engage in trade, but you should be trading with the other leaders or the other adult offers of service rather than with the youth. Because you're right. Like, I mean, it can make for bad optics. It can make for, you know, giving the impression that, you know, you're kind of using your position.
Yeah, you are in a position of authority as a leader or offer of service. And to not mince words about it, you could actually leverage it against a youth to get a badge.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's just not cool.
No,
you know, no one should be doing that. But trading badges should be a fun experience about exchanging ideas and having a conversation and, oh, that's a cool design, you know. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your group, you know, or where this crest comes from or why you got it, you know, give me some backstory so that I can appreciate it for the value that you put on it.
Yeah. And I mean, at Jamborees, this, you know, the concept of age for age actually won't prove to be much of a limitation at all, because there's going to be plenty of people on the adult and offer of service side that are going to be more than willing to, I mean, well, as we just talked about with the hats, because we were at this jamboree as offers of service, and there were other people in the adult sub camp that were just, you know, trying to flag us down.
There were youth participants that were stopping us and asking us for our hats, and there were adult, and we just had to refrain from, well, for me, I valued my hat way too much. So
yeah, I had one hat. So.
Yeah. I probably could have got another one when I got back to Canada, but I, you know, that's a seasoned hat. It had been through a lot with me, so
I... Well, you got to train a beret, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, that's right. There's this certain sentimental...
Years of effort, otherwise.
It's like a good couch or a chair, right? You've developed a bit of a groove in it, and you don't want to just give that away.
But, you know, and I mean, you touched on another thing there, too, because that's kind of the other side of it. I mean... Especially if, you know, you do have something that you know is, you know, widely sought, whether it's a particular kind of necker or whatever, it can actually, you know, it does, it's not fun to have to turn someone down, you know, especially when they're like this bright-eyed scout who's just like, you know, coming out of his shell and is, you know, just anxious to make a trade. But at the same time, it is probably for the best, because it really can seem to undermine a lot of the focus that Scouts has been placing now on, really sort of tightly defining what is acceptable and not acceptable youth-adult interaction. So, I know I had a few offers for my hat from, even Cubs, because there were a few Cubs there. And it's just like, I really wish I could, because, I don't want to crush your hopes, but sorry. Fortunately, I did have the bag of pins, so I could be just like, I can offer you this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's not the hat.
Consolation prize.
But please, take one. I don't want anything. So, that as well. But, I guess, to bring it on home, I guess the whole point is just, this is really, there's a lot of things you can do when you show up to a jamboree or a camp that will enhance the experience for you.
Yes.
Badge trading is certainly one of these, because it really does allow you to, build, to foster a sense of connection with Scouts from around the world, and also then, come home with a little memento that says, hey,
this is where I met this person, and they were really cool, and maybe you've developed a friendship that you want to maintain, and you communicate on a weekly or daily basis. The joy of the internet now is that we can
do that.
We can do that. So you meet a friend now from Australia, and you can talk to them.
Yep. And two, it's just a nice reminder that this scouting thing we do is just about everywhere in the world. It's really nice to have these physical reminders that, here's a guy from Tanzania, and here's this girl from Switzerland, and hey, this guy from Germany, he was really funny. And it's just, this whole sense of, wow, it really does underline the fact that you're part of a global movement, because now you can actually see things in front of you that you've come home with. It's just like, wow, here are Scouts from all these different countries that I met, and now, here, I can see it in front of me. Here's tangible proof that this is a thing. I know too, when I sit and talk with the beavers and I'm wearing the Swiss necker, that's always, I think, the bigger message that they take away. It's fun to talk about geography and where all the countries are, and we've got a big puzzle that turns into a map of the world, and it's fun and the beavers love it. But I think the message that they really like hearing is the fact that, this isn't just something they do in isolation. Yeah. This is part of something, this connects them to,
on a Monday night,
yeah,
anywhere in the world, there could be another beaver colony, or
potentially millions of kids around the world
doing the same.
Do this and find joy in it. And that's really powerful, because let's face it, there's not a 100% overlap between the cool kids and the kids who are in Scouts. And it's a really positive affirmation for them to know that, you are not alone in this. This is something that happens around the world. There's millions of people that do it, and you can go out there and meet them, and it's really fun to do that.
So I think that's a good one.
I think
we've hit on a couple of good points, like for like and age for age, seems to be a good rule of thumb. If you're a leader, try and, before your kids go to the youth go to a larger camp, a larger sectional camp, maybe you want to have the discussion about trading and what that all looks like. Ken's sentiment about, the end result is you want to feel good about what you've got, and you want to feel good about what you've given away.
Definitely. All right. Well, I do have a couple of shout-outs. Three, in fact.
Woohoo!
And I'm debating whether to mention last names, but I think I'll just say, you know what? A big shout-out to Brad and Yoss and Chris, all from the Edmonton BioWare office. They came out tonight to work on a project with my Beaver Scouts, and it was just a mind-blowing experience. It was just awesome. And I'll probably talk a little bit about that more in a later podcast once the project is well and truly done with. But for now, shout out to Brad, Yoss, and Chris. That was really awesome. Thank you, guys. All right. So, please, always remember, you can reach us at scoutingstuffpodcast@gmail.com. That first thing was all one word. There's no spaces or dots or anything. You can follow us on Twitter at @SSYSKpodcast or on facebook.com/scoutingstuffpodcast. Wherever you listen to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, please do leave us a review. Please do subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already.
Give us some feedback. We like to hear your comments.
Yeah, we've greatly enjoyed receiving the feedback we've already received. Hope to hear from more of you in the future. And until next time, be prepared.